Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here. Anybody that's been watching the lead up to the Oscars has been aware of, all too well aware of, the controversy surrounding this Oscars in terms of who's been nominated, who's not been nominated, what else happened to the Golden Globes. The controversy at BAFTA, which is the British equivalent to the Oscars, having the same issues. People like Idris Elba saying that I have to leave Britain in order to get the roles that I want to get, because apparently in Britain it's even worse for black actors finding roles than it is in the United States of America. So there's a lot of controversy around this and why certain films were not nominated at all. Some of us can look at the Oscars and say, well, I mean, I find the Oscars fairly boring. I just want to watch them to watch Chris Rock do his thing, and so I can have a little fun and laugh. But other than that, is there any seriousness behind this, and how do people actually how these things are chosen, and why the Oscars is such a white male dominated institution, given the demographics of America and even the demographics of our creative industries? So there's a lot here to wrestle with, and we're going to do that this hour with our guests and you. We encourage you to join us with your thoughts. What have you seen, and what do you think about the movies that you have seen and the acting you've seen and the cinematography and where you think the best lives for you? 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. Comment on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page. Send an email to talk@steinershow.org. But 410-319-8888. Join Kalima Young, instructor here at Towson University and University of Maryland College Park, and one of our cultural intellectual leaders, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, who is an associate professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, co-editor of Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics, and Africana Communities, and a co-host and guest host here on the Mark Steiner Show, and Ann Hornaday, a film critic for the Washington Post, who has not been on the show for a while, but is back again and used to come on a lot. Hope we can change that and have that happen again. Welcome, ladies. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
So
getting into this question of the Oscars, you know, and before we get into kind of nitty-gritty detail of certain films and more, what is it about the institution of the Oscars? What is it about the way the Oscars are structured in 2015 in an industry that's supposed to be full of creative people, many people who are deemed liberal and progressive, whatever that means, that the Oscars are, and start with Ann Hornaday here if I might, that the Oscars are such a white male-dominated structure? What is that about?
Are you asking me?
I am asking you.
Oh, darn. well, you know, a lot of it is sort of grandfathered in because it's a membership organization where people are invited to join, and they also join by virtue of being nominated. So it's kind of a self fulfilling prophecy in terms of who tends to get reward. You know, who historically has been rewarded, and how the industry has been segregated, you know, for decades and decades. So that's purely demographically, you know, and it's a lifetime membership. So, you know, you have members with voting privileges who, frankly, by this time skew old, white, and male just by virtue of, you know, how the organization has evolved over the years. And then, you know, by my lights, I think what comes into play and what we're seeing, I mean, they vote on what they see, you know, and so I think one question that remains kind of provocative for me is what are they even seeing? You know, I mean, a lot of them are seeing stuff on DVD screeners, and they get these stacks and stacks of screeners, and when they're making choices of what movies to even consider, I'm just wondering how much unconscious bias is coming into play even in that first decision.
That's interesting to me. I actually should call my old friend in New York who gets on the Directors Guild, so he gets to look at some of these films and make these votes as well. But that's interesting. Invited to join, asked to join, lifetime memberships. I had no idea that it's how that rolled.
Yeah.
Kalima Young.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting and similar to the problems that women in the Directors Guild of America are dealing with. If you have this requirement that you had to have made a film within the last 10 years, if there are not enough films being made by women, or a woman hasn't worked consistently for 10 years because of the biases in the industry, it's really hard to be a part of that roster of 10 to 20 female directors that have to be included in the rules to be able to have a motion picture. So I think we're going to run with these new sort of provisions placed in by the Academy about, you know, the 10-year rule and all of these things. You're still going to run into the biases in the industry that makes it so that folks aren't working enough to be actually able to qualify for membership. So I think fixing and working within the Academy structure and changing it around is one level of the playing field. It's like one tier, but it's definitely not going to address the structural biases that are already in place that make it hard for women and people of color to make movies and have their films be considered in that giant pool that the voting Academy members are able to have. Hmm. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
And I would add that it feels very much like an old boy network that essentially also reflects many of the other institutions in our country. And so the Oscars become a microcosm of what we understand is happening in so many other entities in America, that it shouldn't be the shock to us that individuals that are of color or more women aren't being recognized in the same way, because it is the same system that we see carried out in so many other aspects of the country.
So I think about the relevancy of certain institutions like the Oscars and others and so many parts that just seem to we talked about this in terms of politics yesterday about the increasing relevancy of things like the Iowa and New Hampshire primaries as representing America and why they should be first and what in our roots it harkens that keeps us rooted in this past in
that
some
we hold
sense,
on to
that we hold on to mm-hmm. and can't let go. The same thing with, this, with the film industry and Oscars and like that, which are also deeply rooted in who gets funded and who gets to make the movies.
Right.
So I you see some of the response going on. Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith and others saying, well, we're just going to boycott.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much effect that will or will not have them not showing up. But others saying, no, why should we boycott? It's part of our industry. We've got to be there. So, I mean, what is a response to this? I mean, and should there be a response to this? Why should we care? All those things. Go ahead, Kimberly.
I think all of those movements are appropriate for those that feel like we need to be there and present and squarely centered to remind people of the role that black actors play in Hollywood. I think those who choose to boycott or take a stand to say this is unacceptable to us, I think that is also acceptable, because I think with any movement, there needs to be multiple avenues
exactly.
in order to have these issues brought to awareness and then bring about change. So I don't think it needs to be one or the other. And, you know, the pundits who are and even social media who are attacking the two different camps in this instance, I think is a futile effort, and that whoever has chosen to make whatever decision they have regarding the Oscars should be supported in that particular stance, recognizing that there is a larger, bigger role of what needs to be done and addressed in the Academy.
Yeah, definitely. A multi-pronged approach is yep. important for any movement. And then essentially, the actors who are making these choices, or the people in the industry who are making these choices to boycott, they know the consequences of that boycott. It's not like they're walking into this thing blindly. So the ones that are admonishing them, saying you're leading some other people down a bad path, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
People know exactly what they're doing. But the only way that boycotts actually work is that the people who are not being directly impacted need to stand up and be a part of that boycott.
Mm-hmm.
So if Will Smith and Jada are going to boycott, George Clooney should boycott
right.
and other Hollywood hitters as well who are not people of color.
That's right.
It's the same way with the women who are saying there's a pay equity issue, and their male counterparts being like, well, I want to see what the pay is before I say I'm going to take this role. And I want to see her pay too.
Right.
This is a solidarity issue.
Absolutely.
This isn't. And there are multiple approaches, and allies need to be a part of that, too.
Anne?
Agreed on all counts. And I also, when you ask what does it matter, you know, the Oscars, well, it's a spectacle. It's sort of an infomercial for the movie industry. There's a sort of cynical, materialistic, utilitarian lens you can look at it through and kind of shrug and say that it's just kind of a self-congratulatory ritual that we all kind of participate in voyeuristically with the fashion and the speeches and all that. But really, it's also become kind of an alternative business model to the blockbuster tentpole regime that has really dominated Hollywood for the last 20 years, and it's become a way for smaller movies, the more kind of adult, sophisticated dramas, to find some purchase and to actually have a viable economic life. And toward that end, I think it is hugely important, and it's hugely important for, you know, that's where filmmakers of color and women of all races making movies, you know, that they really can get some valuable purchase within the economy of the awards season. And in terms of individual actors, it also gives them careers. You know, it kind of catapults them into a new sort of viability in terms of the roles that they're offered and the kind of career they can construct. So on that level, you know, it really is important.
So, folks, do join us here. We'll get these calls coming in just a moment. 410-319-8888. Want to hear your thoughts and ideas on all of this. I think that one of the things that, and you wrote about, and this is interesting to wrestle with. We talked about this before we went on the air, just about what kind of films are seen and who watches what films. I mean, I love historical films. I've always have. I love history, so I like watching historical films and period pieces. And people, of course, complain that one of the criticisms is that when it comes to most films about black people or by black people or black folks on the screen or native people on the screen, it's about the Holocaust of human slavery. Mm-hmm. It's about the Holocaust of Native American genocide on one level or another, that these are where things are put. And that one of the things there's a dearth of are roles and films that are just good modern dramas,
right,
that have people of color in them.
Right, that are relatively race neutral. I mean, Creed is not a quote-unquote black film. You know, it's a film that happens to be about an African-American young man, but there's absolutely no, you know, there's, and those are precisely, you're right, that's exactly the kind of niche of film that, personally, as a critic, I want to see more of. And that the Oscars stand to celebrate and give visibility to, if they would. And that's where I feel like this disconnect is happening in terms of what the membership considers to be kind of just a universal neutral film, quote, you know, mm-hmm. and what they reward as a black film, you know, like a 12 Years a Slave, which was a masterpiece, you know. I mean, that was an artistic masterpiece, a formal masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there is a myopia in terms of what they regard as just a movie, you know, just a plain old movie.
Yeah, and I have a bit of a difficulty with the idea of something being race neutral, because this country is racist and mm-hmm. nothing can ever be race neutral.
True.
You know, like there's
But I'm talking about the stories, you know, I'm talking about movies that aren't about race explicit, about race. Right?
Yeah, see,
they're not addressing it explicitly. It's woven into the warp and woof, of course, but it's not, the movie itself is not about historical situations or racism or race per se. I guess that's what I'm trying to express.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you that it can't be, neutrality is kind of a myth.
Right. And I'm just thinking about Marna Gonick has this idea about how do we have a decolonized screen.
Mm.
And a decolonized screen is the concept that you will have the universal stories that we all adhere to and understand. However, a decolonized screen, you can have these universal stories with the actually indigenous people and their culture being a part of those stories.
Right.
And that is how you create a decolonized cinema. And that means the people in front of the camera and the people behind the camera are a part of this indigenous culture that's telling these universal stories, that's steeped in these cultures.
Mm.
And if we don't have an understanding of a decolonized screen, if everything that we see is sort of between this binary of, you know, the subject of
right.
versus people's experiences, that's where we start running into controversy.
Yeah, right. And that's my issue, is the binary piece, because I do think that there is a tendency for Hollywood to lean on the narratives of black life that only show us in roles of servitude. And I would say that this also carries over when we're talking about indigenous people. So let's think about that binary of who white dances with wolves versus who white smoke signals, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Even when I talk about this in my class, there's a very different response that I get from students who are looking at the clips from Dances with Wolves versus not finding it humorous at all of anything that happens in Smoke Signals. And I laughed through the entire movie.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Yes. The same thing can be said when we talk about the binary of The Help versus Creed.
Right.
That there is this comfort in popular imagination to keep black folks in a space of servitude that makes us comfortable, that makes us makes them accessible to us, instead of believing that they are full human beings that have an essence, that blackness looks more than just in that particular light.
So I was thinking about what you all were just saying and what Ann started off with, and let me just throw something out here, though. I mean, in terms of I also believe that we live in a world that it's impossible to deal with race neutral in the United States of America, or most of the world at this point, because of what's happened in our Western capital civilization over the last 500 years. Having said that, that not race neutral, but in terms of what Ann was saying, I'm thinking about a movie producer, TV producer, like Shonda Rhimes, who produces TV programs where black characters, white characters, Asian, Latino, whoever the characters are characters in a drama that doesn't focus necessarily on what it means to be black in that situation, what it means to be a native person in that situation, or Latino, or, you know what I'm saying? I mean, and so that's not race neutral, but that's also part of what some people are arguing needs to be part of the world, of our cinematic world, if there's ever going to be a place where we can get to opening up the dramatic world in film to people of color and more.
I would say what Shonda Rhimes does is she creates a decolonized screen. She creates that concept of the decolonized screen where, okay, you're just going to have universal stories and people are going to pay a part of these stories, but we're also going to have people of color and women behind the camera. We're going to have people of color and women in front of the camera. It is the audience who is going to read what they're going to read on top
right.
of that.
Right.
And I think the audience, there's no way that we as the audience can see it as a race neutral space, because I love watching Viola kick people in the face and be a hot mess. You know, like, as a black woman who watches this, I feel a specific thing
of course,
and empathy.
Right. Uh-huh.
So, you know, so we can tell these universal stories, but the folks who are the spectators, the witnesses, are going to have a specific racialized,
reading,
gendered, class-based experience while watching it. So...
I'm trying that out because I want to get into this complexity of this, because it's not an easy thing to unpack.
Well, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. You know, Ava DuVernay, she and I have talked often, and she said it at Sundance, but she said it before, where she really does not love the term diversity, which I don't either.
I saw that, right.
Because I really think, and I hit on it a little bit in this story that I wrote for this Sunday, but I'm going to come back. I mean, I really feel like spectatorship is where the rubber hits the road here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not, I just feel like terms like diversity or, you know, the dreaded political correctness, whatever, you know, used as a pejorative, are so not useful. And what we should really be talking about on the maker side is cultural fluency.
Mm.
And on the spectator side, cultural literacy, you know?
Yes.
And I kind of feel like those are much more useful and relevant terms in these spaces that we're talking about, where people meet these texts and meet these narratives and process them, as you said, through their own, you know, through their own experience. But like these binaries, I mean, I totally agree with everything, you know. Like, I imperfectly expressed it with the term race neutral, but I feel like we're all, you know, grasping for the same thing here.
So this whole term of diversity, I mean, I don't struggle with it in the same way, and maybe it's because of how I teach it. I do believe that the culture of around PC language, we've made this on top of PC language another pejorative term to mean something bad. But even when I'm talking to my students, I'm like, we're all diverse. And that means including that white male heterosexual that's sitting in my classroom. He too is diverse.
Mm-hmm.
It is just the way in which we have decided in popular culture and society to talk about the terminology of diversity that makes it pejorative and makes us feel like, oh, that's only for that population of people. But if you're thinking about it in terms of life experiences, in terms of how we live our lives, in terms of what our class or sexual orientation or upbringing, all of those things mean diversity. And so because we've attached so much negativity to that concept, now it's like, let's toss that away. It's no different than what we did in the 80s with multiculturalism. Mm-hmm. We said that word and that was the buzzword. We were all in school hyped about learning about different cultures. And then the moment the push from conservatives started raising this as being a PC language thing, then all of a sudden multiculturalism disappeared. So then diversity became a new term. So all we're doing is playing with the words, but the reality is we need to deal with the issue, which is about what Ava DuVernay says of inclusion and embracing difference and belonging.
So I'm going to open the phones here and see what our listeners are thinking. There's so much here to talk about that I want to get to. I mean, I'm thinking about the people who we do not talk about. I want to talk about in a little bit, whether it's people like Ana Asante or Casey Lemon who are making incredible films that are not part of this pantheon that get recognized in a major way. And talk about some of the specifics of the Oscars and my thoughts on Idris Elba, who I think did one of the finest acting jobs this entire year of film coming out with Beasts of No Nation. Was just incredible what he transformed himself into in that film, and not to be recognized just as an actor for what he did in that film, to whatever that means to be best actor. But let me go to the phones first. 410-319-8888 is the number. Let's go to Spice. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Very well. Good morning.
Good morning. I really appreciate this conversation. Since I've been snowed in, I work in the city schools, and I wanted to do, I was on Netflix, and I looked up civil rights, and nothing came up. Mm. I looked up human rights, and nothing came up. And then I put in the word black, because I wanted to get a movie, you know, that related to MLK or some civil rights. You know, I was just in that kind of a space, and this movie came up, Blackbird. And I don't know if you all have seen it, but it's about a young black man struggling with his sexuality in the South. And it didn't have that much to do with the color of his skin. It had to do with his sexuality. It was about teenagers and dealing with, you know, dealing with sex. And it was just so beautiful because it wasn't a movie about color, but it had, you know, people of color in it. And there was something about the church, you know, and, you know, God and what God says about homosexuality. But I was just so frustrating. And I watched the movie, and it was excellent. And I don't know how many people have seen it because it's kind of hidden. It's so hard. On Netflix, you can't. It's very hard to find movies without white people in it. And it's very hard. And then I saw the Nina Simone documentary, which was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal documentary.
And it's nominated.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's frustrating everywhere. I mean, I put myself in situations where I am not, I am a minority in a lot of my life. And I love that. And I wish more people would do that. And it's very hard to do. And it's frustrating. And you need to speak it out. And I just wanted to say that, you know, it's a white, straight, male world we live in. And we need to, if we want to get out of it, we need to do it. You know, we need to think about it. It doesn't just come to us. We need to be raised that way in a multicultural world in which we live in. And thank you.
Thank you, Spice. Sometimes if you want to find the films you're looking for, but that you have to actually go somewhere else and kind of Google things like black lead films or black women directors, and then you get your list of films, then you can find what you're looking for.
Oh, look at that huge list of black female directors who've been doing this since the beginning of cinema.
And we can't, and that's how you find them. I mean, that is the only way to really,
because
they're not distributed. And that's how I find the films on Netflix. I ran across Beasts of No Nation completely by accident on Amtrak coming back from New York, saying I need to watch a movie, and there it was. You know, what I mean?
Right?
I mean, that's. That's where we are. 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air.
Morning, Mark Steiner.
Good morning, Leo Burrows.
Good morning to you and your guests. And
good morning.
Again, a happy new year to all of you. This is a wonderful conversation, though I'm aware of the fact that the Oscars are instruments of white cultural validation of sorts. You know, we as black people, I'm a member or was a member of the Arena Players. I'm still a supporter of Arena Players in Baltimore City, the oldest black, continuously active black theater company in the United States today. Very little support given by the city of Baltimore, the state of Maryland, or many others, including white people in power, white males, black people, etc. They're still existing only but by a thread. White male domination is not new. It's part of the fabric of institutional racism. And so what black people have to do, what we must do, is to focus on bigger fish to fry, namely the economics of black cultural empowerment and self-determination. We've got to build our own institutions, do our own thing. We know we're talented. We know that people of all races and creeds will embrace what we do, but this is a waste of time and energy focusing on the Oscars. We've got to build our own institutions, and that's the way to go in a racist society that fundamentally, Mark, it's not changing. The discussions are great, but we do this every 5 or 10 years. Every decade, we go around and around with, and the liberal whites, there are some liberal white people who mean well, but the reality is that we're suffering, we're dying economically and otherwise. We've got to stand on our own 2 feet with help from wherever we might find it.
Right, we have to take a very short break, but let's talk about this in terms of what the topic is, which is films. And I might challenge a little bit. I've known Leo for over 50 years. We were arrested together in the civil rights back in the day when he was one of the guys at Morgan State University I looked up to, so I've always thought about Leo that way. But I've challenged the notion of not changing, and also what we mean by change, and the constant struggle that America has always been in when it comes to change in this country, pushed mostly by people of color in this country to make that change. And also, when we talk about films and TV, which are the medium that defines our culture and actually affects the way human beings think and behave, what does that mean in the context of this larger society and how we do that? How does that happen? We're going to take a break and come right back. Stay with us. Bobby, the next caller, we're going to wrestle with this when we come back from this break. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here. We're here with Anne Hornaday, film critic for The Washington Post, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, associate professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, author of co-editor of Blackberries and Red Bones, critical articulations of black hair, body politics, and Africana communities, and a co-host and guest host on this program, Kalima Young, instructor at Towson University, University of Maryland College Park, a important cultural figure in our community, working on her PhD in American Studies. Let me throw that out there.
Yay.
As well. Yeah. 410-319-8888. First appeared in the show in 1993. You were just a child. You were 18 years old.
I was a baby.
You were a baby. 410-319-8888. But let's go back to where we left off, then we'll come back to the phones here. And Bobby, we're going to come to your call, so do hold on. AJ, we're going to come to your thought as well. So both of you are sitting here in the studio. I don't really want to jump into what I said. So, Kalima?
Yeah, I guess the first thing I wanted to say is that in terms of this conversation of the institutions and creating our own institutions, people of color and women have been creating their own cultural products in the world of film and media since the beginning of film and media. So I wish folks would take a moment to understand and respect what people have been doing and the stories folks have been telling. And essentially, most black cinema, African-American cinema in this country has been independent cinema since the beginning. So we need to actually pay attention and acknowledge that. And then also, we cannot dismiss the importance of media as a cultural text that defines our values, our ideologies, how we see ourselves in the world, and also impacts how we end up thinking about our role in the world. So that can't be something that's dismissed. And,
Anne, go ahead. Then we'll turn to Kimberly. Go ahead.
I think a fascinating, there's this Sundance is going on right now, which really embodies this idea, which is that, Ava DuVernay's out there announcing a partnership between her releasing company, Array, which is hugely important, and a partnership between that and the funding site Indiegogo. We had, you know, the big story out of Sundance is this movie that Nate Parker made.
Yeah, right, right.
About the Nat Turner Rebellion. Completely, you know, I mean, talk about independent.
Yeah.
As well as movies like Southside with You. And so there, you know, and you know, Ava herself is a part, you know, Ryan Coogler, Dee Rees, I mean, like, you know, as Clinda said, I mean, this is a long-standing tradition and a vibrant one. And that I just think it's fascinating that that narrative of autonomy and self-definition is emerging precisely within this, you know, the Oscars So White context. You know, it's kind of perfect in a way that, you know, yet again, we have this parallel narrative of independence and autonomy.
I think it's so important for us to just to go back to a point Kalima raised already about the significance of media, that it's not this entity in our society that we kind of tap into or that we go to when we desire something or we desire to be entertained, but it is so immersed and pervasive in everything we do on a daily basis. And it only takes to look around at Baltimore City school children to see that reflected in our society. And so to want to categorize or believe that we can do without or distance or separate ourselves from some entity and focus on these other areas, I think it's just a bit short-sighted. And it means that I wouldn't have a job either to talk about these issues, because I do believe it is so valuable to who we are and how we see ourselves. And the amount of research that's being done about the connection between media and self-esteem, I mean, all of that shows us that media matters. But what are we going to do with it is the bigger question. How are we going to control it? How are we going to be in control of it and its determining factor of our lives?
And I think that the part of being in control is really important. I was thinking about Ryan Coogler. And Creed is, but I'm thinking about the first movie, Fruitvale Station. And without Forrest Whitaker, the movie would not have been made, who led the fight to raise the money to make that movie. And I interviewed Ryan when that movie first came out. Hard to get to him now, but it got to him then. but I think that one of the things that like Fruitvale Station, let's say, this particular movie, that it the portrayal of the characters in that movie, working class, going through life, working hard, being fathers, being mothers, being loving, facing the reality of the world every day in a modern drama, was a very, it'd been hard even for a completely empathetic non-black person to make that movie. But the humanity that that movie showed is what begins to change the way people think about race, those kind of films.
Right.
And they're as important sometimes, if not more important, than 12 Years a Slave.
Absolutely.
Right.
Because of they're here now.
That's
what I'm trying to get at with this kind of what we're talking about at the beginning of the show, this niche of just modern contemporary dramas. I mean, I think Ava's film Middle of Nowhere did the same thing, you know.
Beyond the Lights.
They're hugely beyond the lights. Yes, exactly. I mean, these are these. I don't know. They're normative in a really important way. If you know, in terms of just defining, in our case, the American experience. And you know, let's not forget, this is our chief global export right now. You know, are these images, and so that's another valence of power. And so this is what the world looks like. You know, this is what American life looks like. I think that's important for everyone to internalize.
And all of the films that we've recently called out are examples of movies that have shown that level of complexity and that fullness that I'm talking about of understanding blackness. That it doesn't look like just this role of servitude or this role of criminal, but we got to see in that character in Fruitvale Station, we got to see his depth and how complex he was as an individual, and not just someone who had experiences with law enforcement embarrassment, and so the end result is what was to come, that of course he was heading down that road and deserved that. And if you think about it, that is exactly how so much of the conversations of the recent deaths of a number of young black men in this country mm-hmm. have been talked about,
right.
That we see them as individuals that have had some interaction with law enforcement, so of course the end result would be death, mm-hmm. instead of being able to see their complexity as a human being, not black, but a
right.
human being, to understand that the circumstances or the directions that they took may have led them in a particular way, but it doesn't mean that they were not a full human being without these interactions.
Mm-hmm. That's very important. That's the difference here, and I think that's why these things are critically important films.
Which is why I'm not a fan of films like The Help. I mean, mm-hmm. that's why I'd struggle when we talked off air about being in that space of being some of the individuals who are against these types of films being made. I'm not against them being made. I'm against that those are the ones that Hollywood wants to promote
Agreed.
And create as being the major narrative of what it means to be a black person in America.
And those tend to be the narratives, to swing it back to the Oscars, those do tend to be the narratives that Oscars reward, you know?
Right.
I mean, they definitely play into comfortable zones of comfort that are really problematic,
right.
you know?
And I would just quickly venture to say that, and with the demographic of the voting Academy members, even Beyond the Lights would be seen as, oh, this is a black film.
Exactly.
Okay? Like,
exactly.
If these, like, even...
Who Phil Station was.
Right.
Exactly.
It'll be like, all right, well, this is a black
exactly.
film, as opposed to this is a film about some folks
exactly.
and some famous and some singing and some things.
Precisely my point.
So,
exactly. And I would say the same thing about Creed and,
exactly.
frankly, Beast of No Nation. Even, you know, it's specifically grounded in Africa. It's a war film up with Apocalypse Now, you know,
in terms
of its greater
yep.
themes. I mean, there's absolutely yep. no reason to label that in any way other than a magnificent war film.
And it was, I mean, again, Idris Elba in that, I'm going to go to the phones here, but Idris Elba in that role. I mean, as a person who spent years teaching acting and working in that world, watching him in that role transform himself into this complex pathological figure. It was just amazing. I just was just below. And the young boy whose name I don't know.
Abraham Attah.
Thank you, Abraham Attah.
Yeah.
Why he was not nominated for Best Supporting Actor in that. I mean, the two of them in that film were just, the dynamic between them as actors had so much energy. It was just an amazing film. But anyway.
What kind of sentimental narratives sell when it relates to black people?
There you go.
410-319-8888. Bobby, welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning, Brother Simon, your guest.
Good morning.
Hello.
I got to congratulate you for always having the black issues on your show. This is the first time I'm calling to you on your show. I would like to know, at what point will blacks come to the realization that they no longer need it in this country? And all that, we can put all this in the Black Lives Matter. I would like to ask you and your guests a question. At what point in time in our sojourn in this part of the world that black lives really did matter? Now, historically, we have had a tremendous, black have always had a tremendous film industry. Why can't we have a guild where we can have our own awards given to our actors and actresses of black people? Because we can make tremendously good films. Now, one more point I want to make, Brother Steiner. Nollywood is the second biggest movie industry in the world. They are based in Nigeria. They make sure, why can't we, the blacks in this country, collaborate with the blacks in the motherland and give us uplifting movies to uplift ourselves, uplift our minds, uplift our spirituality? In the Caribbean, we produce tremendous black movies. We need a guild where we can have our own awards and stop pussying to the black people, because they don't really want us around. They do not want us around. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Bobby. Mm. Reactions?
I just want to mention that everybody in 12 Years a Slave was across the African diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
The actors, the directors, the people behind the camera, the people across the cameras. Just throwing that out there. But other folks can add comment to that.
No, and I think that you're seeing more of that in terms of the films being made and actors throughout the black diaspora in Africa working together. That's mm-hmm. I think that phenomenon is building.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, this is
look at Selma.
Look at Selma, mm-hmm. right?
And look at Andrew DeSanmu.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that we're this is a part of this thing of why this program is not just about the Oscars alone, but what the Oscars conversation needs to generate is because I think we are in another one of those historical moments of great change that's affecting lots of levels of the society, the creative, criminal justice, not just criminal justice, but the creative, business. I mean, there's all kinds of aspects of our culture now that are being challenged mm-hmm. and opening. And we don't know what this opening is going to mean. We'll know in 10 years what this opening will mean. Mm-hmm. We don't know now, but I think it's happening.
Right, which is why I feel like this issue of cultural literacy is so important, because I just don't think any longer, I mean, I think especially after something like Oscars So White, no longer can a sophisticated viewer on any level accept the trope that white equals neutral,
mm-hmm.
right? That's just not going to fly. And so this is, you know, like you said, we're in the midst of that perceptual change. And I feel like that's the perceptual change that the Academy looks like is resisting, you know, when it just literally fails to see these movies, let alone to, you know, reward them, but to even see them.
To even see them.
That's a perceptual, right. You know, that's an issue, again, of cultural fluency and literacy.
And I would really encourage, what I said earlier, I meant to go back to the phones here and jump back to our guest, is that I really encourage people to go on the internet and really look for films that you had not seen, and just by looking at black actor, leading black female director, whatever, anything like that, native director, and just look at the films that come out,
right.
And then hit Netflix or some other place that has these films stored and go watch them.
Mm-hmm.
And get is they're out there. We have to kind of, the more that happens, the more it gets demanded.
Right.
That be made and people can see them and just go out there and start pulling them down and watching them.
You got to support them for them to actually have any kind of traction and for people to be able to make more of them.
And more of us are watching all of our films at home, hanging out around our little 14, 25-inch, whatever that number is, TV sets that we got.
14?
On a watch?
14 is too small, isn't it?
I'm watching it on my Seiko.
Fine. Just showing my age, I filed. Fine. I went back to the phones. 410-319-8888. AJ, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, good morning to everybody. How
good
you
morning.
Doing?
Good very
morning.
Well.
Hi, AJ.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for this program. It's a very fascinating conversation. I love it. And so I do have a comment and question. Concerning this, you know, while completely acknowledging, you know, this discussion of binary, this separateness of, you know, either or, black and white, and the damaging effects that it has, and, you know, the struggle that it is to move culture forward in that regard. And the idea that the Academy is representative, much like, you know, government or any other system. And so it's incumbent upon the people to make that organization reflective truly, you know, genuinely, and not just, you know, old hat. And to that, you know, in evolving and including and making sure that I like the discussion of the humanity of the person. You know, this is not to... race is crucial. You know, this discussion of race is absolutely critical. It's overdue. But my question here is, does it sell an audience short? Does it sell, you know, the people, the culture short, to say that it's impossible to transcend this lens of race? While moving forward in time and in thought and heart and spirit, you know, as we evolve forward, you know, does it sell us short to say that it's, you know, we can't, no matter what we do, look past this thing?
I don't think race is something you can move past. People are living in their skin. They're having racialized experiences no matter where they are. So as a viewer and as a spectator, you're going to have your experience in that space. You're going to be rooted in who you are. So we can support universal stories that appeal to all of us, which you and I have done in our lives as filmmakers. But you also have to realize that people are going to come into viewing with their lived body and experience, and they're going to see it and experience, have a racialized experience, no matter where they stand. So there's no way to divorce self from what you're viewing. you know, you can appeal to a universal theme, but you can't divorce yourself and your experience of being in that skin when you're watching something. I don't know.
And when I hear that, I kind of cringe just a bit, just to be candid, because what I hear is I need something that's going to make me comfortable to have this movie-going experience. And I think it's also, as much as we see our movie-going experience as entertainment, it's also important to understand that there's something we take away from it. Like, there's some tidbit. We don't see it at school, but there's some tidbit that we leave with that we now understand something mm-hmm. of a lived experience slightly differently based on how it was presented to us. So it shouldn't be about creating this space of comfort that, oh, now that I can connect to it without seeing race, then it's okay. I think what we should do, exactly what Kalima has shared, is to understand that no matter what, because of our lived experience, we will look through a particular lens, a way of seeing.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
That's not bad. It's nothing wrong with that.
AJ, do you want to have one final thought on this before we go to our next caller?
What was that?
Did you have one quick final thought of what was just said in response to what you said?
Yes, absolutely. And I appreciate that, and I agree with those points, but I'm definitely not advocating divorce, and I understand that people come to, you know, experiences with their lenses of their histories. How do we improve those things at the root so that the lenses and the experiences that people are bringing to the table are overall more positive and life-affirming? So it's all reflective. So I guess really it's like you're looking at the humanity of all people, not to divorce race, but to evolve humanity, because that's the race that we are. And so I agree with all of these things, and, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, moving us forward in heart, honestly, as much as possible.
AJ, thanks for calling in. Let me get another caller in here, 410-319-8888. We've generated a lot of interest here. Listeners, I really want to hear what people are thinking. Let's go to Brian in Virginia. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
First off, I understand all the clamor over the Academy Awards and why black folks haven't been included, but in reality, I really don't care, because I know that the Academy Awards are not really, you know, it's an organization that's designed to highlight what white folks have done in film, and I don't have a problem with that. If that's the standard that they have, and they want to say these are the films that we think are the greatest according to our standard, that's great. And if black folks make films that fit that standard and want to compete in that arena, that's fine, too. And if they don't get any awards and are upset and everything, that's cool, too. I can understand that. What's more important to me is that we establish our own aesthetic, that we establish our own set of criteria that we base our films on, and the shoe will be on the other foot. If white folks make films that meet our standards and are really good, then we'll give them an award at our award show. It's a long road to get to where I think folks want to be. And I think we're moving in the right direction, but and the issue is that there's a sense of urgency that we should be somewhere already. But it's a very complicated and a whole lot of different factors that go into getting us to that point. I agree with what you guys are saying. There are lots of films out there that are in the black community that black filmmakers have made and other people have made that are worthy, that don't get any kind of nod. But here's my question. Is there a list? Did somebody generate a list or point people in a direction of where you can see these films you were talking about, or get an idea of what films they are? I know you can, you know, go and Google, search Netflix or whatever and find the different films, but is there anybody that has put something together like that? And is there anybody coming together with some kind of a set of standards to say, okay, these are, you know, not just talking about BET Awards and stuff like that, NAACP Awards, but filmmakers, right. People, black filmmakers who say, okay, we got to get together and we say whether the best films
okay.
or worst films.
Let people respond to that. And before we have to take a break here, Anne, did you want to jump in? And I don't know. Maybe someone has to create that list. I don't know if that list exists. It'd probably be a good thing to have a place for people to go, but I don't know where that is. Anne?
I don't know of any sort of codified list. And I also don't know of any such other than the Image Awards and BET Awards. I don't know of any. And then festivals, you know. Mm-hmm. But...
And I think it would be interesting to think about also what the earlier thing he said was, how important is it? And it's important to wrestle with how important is it to force institutions that are major institutions in this country, like the Oscars, which do affect the American mindset, mm-hmm. to be forced to change mm-hmm. as part of the struggle to change America.
Right. I myself am very conflicted about that question always, because there's this definite part of me that's just like, no, you really don't need the large institution, because that acknowledges historically and currently that people have been making movies outside of that particular institution in these particular spaces of validation forever and ever and ever, and that there should be an appreciation for that. But there's also something to be said for the amount of power and access that that particular institution provides independent and other filmmakers to be able to keep on and continue doing their work. It depends on whatever people's sort of goal post is for success, right? Is your goal post to suddenly make a $1 trillion movie that's, you know, going to be in the Academy? Or is your goalpost that I want to tell my story and I want people to watch it and I want to have enough people to watch it and I want to be able to eat? So
both of those require
support.
And then that's a mutually exclusive. I mean,
and they're not exactly. And yeah. I feel like that's where Ava, I just feel like Ava embodies both those stances in her own way. You know, I mean, she's very much independent and autonomous and not waiting around for permission. But she's very engaged with the institutions as well. And so you're right, it's not mutually exclusive. And again, to circle back, it's not to even the boycott question. Yes, both. You know, let's have it all.
Right. And I think that I mean, these are really kind of critical questions. I think when you look what happened to Sundance yesterday, that I, mm-hmm. the article I read this morning, mm-hmm. was that the birth of the nation, mm-hmm. There was a bidding war for that
yeah.
film.
Yeah, $17 million yeah. fought by Fox Searchlight.
And it went to Fox Searchlight, actually, who bid less than, was it?
Netflix.
Netflix, yeah. Which wanted it, was in the 20s from what I read, mm-hmm. $20 million range to get this film, but it went with Fox, that it wanted to make sure they had the distribution.
That's right.
Exactly.
And so, but I think these are important critical turning points. These mm-hmm. are not minor things that just happened. It's not just about him as a filmmaker and this one film. Things are happening here, whether you know, it's Black Lives Matter pushing issues in this presidential campaign like they've never been pushed before, pushed in a different way than they've been pushed before, mm-hmm. or whether you look at the Oscars and what has happened from the Golden Globes to the Oscars and the explosion around where are the films of people of color and why are they not being given credence for the job that they do. These are explosive moments.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know,
it's a synergy around these types of social justice issues that I think we can capitalize off of and not believe that they are just these little bleeps on the screen, but mm-hmm. in fact are connected. And as you said, Mark, 10 years from now, we'll be able to look back and see these direct connections
mm-hmm. right.
to and how they connected to each other instead of seeing them as this little spark here and a spark over there, but in fact that they all are a part of the same synergy to move us forward.
And they're also technologically mediated by this, you know, by social media, by, you know, by different distribution exhibition channels. I mean, that plays into this in a really fascinating way as well. I mean, one fascinating thing to me is the dearth of roles for black women in feature films this past year as opposed mm-hmm. to television.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's just fascinating to me.
So we'll tackle that in a minute. We have to take a short news break here. We're going to come back to conclude this conversation next 15 or 20 minutes and get to Mitchell and Chris, next two callers up, and come back to this. So stay with us and with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Ann Hornaday, and Kalima Young, and reminding you here as we go to break that when I mention Birth of a Nation, it's the new film, not the film made in 1915 we're talking about here. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us as we continue our conversation here on the Mark Steiner Show on whatever word you like to use, diversity in film, on what the Oscars, the controversy around the Oscars, nominating no major black film director, actor, in this for the Oscars and what that conversation is that was created here. And we are trying to wrestle with some of those issues that come out of that and go beyond that with our guest, Anne Hornaday, film critic for The Washington Post, Kalima Young, instructor at Towson University and the University of Maryland College Park, Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, associate professor of American Studies at UMBC and co-editor of Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics in Africana Communities, and a guest host and co-host in this program. And you all, 410-319-8888. Before I come back to Birth of a Nation and some other and your thoughts as we wrap this conversation up, let me get a couple of calls in here. We'll do that. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Mitchell. You're on the air. Mitchell, how are you, man?
Fine. Dr. Jared Ball, Jared Balls talks about the colonial narrative and Hollywood and the Oscars represent that so profoundly that you can have a film like Kevin Hart Ride Along, where Kevin Hart plays this braggadocious guy, who the first one where he wants to be this policeman, and he goes out and becomes arrogant and disrespectful to people and treats them like dirt, you know, in this funny way, and makes a lot of money and black people laugh at it. But that film made, and but he's the kind of that guy as a policeman is the kind of guy that abuses people that we get disgusted at. And then you have a film like Straight Outta Compton, where so that encourages the colonial narrative in a way. And then you have a film like Straight Outta Compton, that these young guys get together and they totally, consciously or unconsciously, reject the colonial narrative by the nature of their experiences. But the contradiction is that they become successful by rejecting the colonial narrative. So they become economically successful by rejecting the colonial narrative. Mm-hmm. Now, how can the Oscars, which is a great film, a really great film, now how in the world could the Oscars or Hollywood ever give an Oscar nomination to that movie? And from what I understand, the only two people that got an Oscar nomination were two white writers. But the film itself, how can you promote that? Here are these people totally reject the colonial narrative and become so economically successful. How do you explain that?
Thoughts on that? Anne, go ahead.
Well, it gets kind of back to what we were saying about the institutional, this narrow channel of acceptability in terms of what the industry will accept as movies economically worth making. And then worth rewarding, and that's where you get the help. So, you know, it's either it's servants and servile roles or clowns, historically. And that's precisely where I think this, you know, this whole conversation has served to, I hope, illuminate. And I guess the embedded question is it just so structurally a part of the industry that it's not even, I mean, an associated issue is this persistent myth that they used to say black doesn't travel. That was kind of their reasoning for not making more films by and about African-American people, because they just wouldn't travel overseas. Well, that has been consistently whacked down year after year, Compton being one of them, actually. Creed also being one that have done very well overseas. So this kinds of, you know, this reasoning that the industry people and executives keep grasping for to kind of just perpetuate their own biases, it's fallen apart.
Now, I think we are seeing that. I mean, that there's the crack in the wall here. I saw Straight Outta Compton, and just as I'm no Mitchell well, he's a great actor and a really deep thinker. I wasn't blown away by the film. I really just wasn't. Actually, yeah. Otherwise. But I mean, and the narrative that he put up about the film, I think that is part of the narrative of that film. I think that's true. Mm-hmm. But I really wasn't. I had fun.
Right.
But any other questions, comments on that before we go back? 410-319-8888. Let's go to Chris. You're on the air. Chris, you're on the air. Do we have Chris? Chris, you there? All right, let's go somewhere else then. 410-3198, come right back to the phone. So, I mean, what?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was just handed this thing by Kimberly Moffitt that says we can't even play ourselves. Can we just one day off from this mess? White British actor Joseph Fiennes is set to play Michael Jackson in British TV dramedy. Is that true?
Oh, my. Oh, wow.
Have you heard about that, Ann Hornaday?
No, I've been, no.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to Twitter right now.
I'm blown. Okay, so we have the whole Zoe Saldana issue with Nina Simone, right? And now we have a white man playing Michael. What?
Mm. Oh, we had a whole film in Egypt that was
played by
whites. Oh,
yeah, true. Played by white people.
Yeah.
Man,
so
I'm done.
So why is that a shock?
Can we leave?
No, you can't leave yet.
Oh, darn. I'm mad.
But that says a great deal. I mean, that's kind of a shocking way to think about this conversation we've been having. You read that and why an actor of that note and also of means that doesn't really need that role would take a role like that.
And it's a dramedy as well, which means it's a drama and a comedy.
That's right.
Which is just
that means he's
going to be racist.
That just doesn't sound.
It's just racist.
He's going to wear blackface before the operations?
Yeah. What? Like, how's that going to work out? That's like Scarlett Johansson and Ghost in the Shell, the whole like, you know, casting of white women in Asian women roles. And okay.
So let me kind of, as we wind our conversation up here, I'd like to get some thoughts from all of you just about a bunch of things. I think that The Birth of a Nation that we talked about earlier, the new film, is going to be a groundbreaking film in many ways. Just what I've been reading about it. I can't wait to really see it myself.
Oh, definitely.
I wish I was at Sundance so I could have seen it, but if not, we're here. But just some closing thoughts from the three of you, and also some films that you think that our listeners may want to grab a hold of that we don't think about. That would be an unfair question to ask at the last second if you have them in your heads. But Ann Hornaday?
Oh, well, one of the – well, first of all, I'm a big fan of Chirac, the Spike Lee movie, where he kind of repurposes the Lysistrata narrative for modern-day Chicago, if only to behold the central performance from Tiona Paris, who just I found to be just absolutely electrifying. I mean, as usual with Spike Lee, you know, there are you can have tension with some of the assumptions in the narrative, but I just found it to be really, really worth watching. And again, she was just revelatory for me. I would second your opinion on Beasts of No Nation. And from years past, I loved Beyond the Lights and Belle both. I mean, I thought they were just fabulous, just pleasure centers. You know, we're talking about pleasure here. We're talking about the construction of pleasure and audience pleasure. And I guess that's my obsession right now is threading people through this in terms of just breaking out of these boxes that we've either put ourselves in or that the industry has put us in demographically in order to just have a more expansive notion of what narrative is and what relatable universal stories are.
Mm-hmm.
End of speech.
Kimberly Moffitt.
It is a dated story, but I would still say in terms of indigenous people that Smoke Signals is one of the best.
One of the funniest movies I've ever
seen.
Oh,
my goodness. One of the best films that, I mean, encapsulates the idea of being made by, acted in, and completely and solidly responsible for by other indigenous people. And I think Sherman Alexie did a fabulous job.
Yeah, the movie is so, as my friends would say, it's so res. I mean, it's so real. I mean, because that, the humor and everything else, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Kalima Young?
If as a queer black filmmaker, if you have never seen the movie Pariah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Pariah,
you need to get yourself on some Netflix and watch that film.
Yeah.
I make my students watch it every single semester. I don't care. You watching this movie. I don't care what class I'm teaching. You still watching this movie. Because
you have to apologize.
And I apologize.
You're studying kindergarten, but you're watching this movie.
Okay. Are you in kindergarten? Watch this movie and don't pay attention to the dildo. But please, like, if you have not seen it, you should see it. You should take some time out and understand a black female queer experience in America. That would be a really good opportunity for you.
Yeah. Hear, hear.
I agree.
There you go.
I agree.
And I was thinking, I just got a note here, just as we were talking about Birth of the Nation, I don't know if we said what it was about, which comes out of the Nat Turner Rebellion, but it's But it is Nat Turner seen in a way that is, when he described why he made the film this way, and I'm blacking on the name of the director?
Nate Parker.
The actor Nate
wonderful
Parker.
Wonderful actor.
Yeah, wonderful actor.
He stars in it too.
Yeah,
he stars in it as well. Is that it's a birth of a nation because he sees this as a moment of the birth of America with this rebellion from, as he sees it, as a kind, gentle spirit who was forced to make this violent rebellion given what he faced and the things he witnessed in his space. And I think that I really can't wait to see what he did. He made this film for $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
In a month. It only took a month to shoot it.
Yep, less than a month,
right?
In Georgia.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes the best films are made like
absolutely.
That and not, you know, that takes 6 months to make and hundreds of millions of dollars to shoot. So I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait for this thing to come through town for us to watch this and we can really wrestle with it once we get to see it. So
I'm Ritz.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, and I always encourage people, there's so many great films out there. Just really do, you know, go out there and Google certain things. I mean, I Googled black female directors and came up with 7 women and 15 incredible films. And I Googled black male directed films and Native American. I Googled 15 best Native films that Indian Country Today put out. I mean, there are this other place. You can see the films. Go on Netflix, other places, Amazon, whoever you see your movies. And just
and
pull them down and see them.
The WAM Film Festival that's going to be at Towson University in April. That's the Women in Film and Media Film Festival. If you want to see some shorts made by women of all races, of all colors, who are behind the camera doing good work. There are opportunities in this town to do such things.
There are. And so I think that there's so much out there. And I do believe that if you believe in the film, not just seeing it, but if you want to make it, you make your own films and start pushing. And push that envelope, which is what's happening now with the Oscars. We'll see what this 2020 goal means for them, if they really want to change, what that change will be.
I'm looking forward to Chris Rock's
me too.
Monologue.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be – that's the whole reason to turn it on that night is to watch
the
opening.
I'm just going to watch it again. Like, come on, give it.
Can't wait.
That I want to see.
He can be problematic, but he can talk.
Yes, he can. And so, you know, I mean, maybe it might be the last time he does the Oscars. You never know. Maybe he might be afraid. That was great. I want to thank all of you for being here. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Associate Professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, co-editor of the book Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics in Africana Communities, and as I say, is co-host and guest host here on The Mark Steiner Show, and Hornaday film critic for The Washington Post, and we'll be linking to all of her reviews of late, which you can see at steinershow.org. Kalima Young is an instructor at Towson University and University of Maryland College Park, one of our cultural warriors and deep thinkers, who is now working on her PhD in American Studies and will be a regular commentator here on The Mark Steiner Show in the year of 2016. And thank the three of you so much for being here. It's been a great, great conversation.
Thank you. All of you.
Always the opportunity.
Thank you all for calling in. Great callers. Really good ideas you threw out there. We look forward to having more of these in-depth discussions like this. Get us out of the realm of this everyday politics, which we need to get away from. Don't go away. When we come back, we're going to sit down with Michelle Antoinette and her latest project, Brown and Healthy. Stay with us.